Hi, I'm Jessica Fries, and I'm really pleased to welcome you to the latest instalment of the Financing Our Future podcast, brought to you by the Prince's Accounting for Sustainability project, A4S. Today, we're going to be talking about finance and the role that finance plays in creating a sustainable future, particularly looking at the green recovery and achieving net zero emissions. I'm really pleased to welcome Daniel Clerk, who is the Global Head of Sustainable Finance at HSBC, to talk us through the role of banks, the role of investors, and some of the actions that HSBC and others are taking in response to the pandemic, but also looking ahead. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you, Jessica. Thank you for having me.
It might be worth just pausing and saying a few words thinking about the current context, and we're obviously in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. It's hitting the economy hard, it's hitting people hard. As a bank, you've got a clear role to play in responding to the pandemic. So maybe you could say a few words about how you see the banking sector responding and HSBC specifically.
Yeah, Jessica, you're absolutely right. We're in the middle of a major social and economic crisis. And the way I would look at this is almost in three phases. Right? There's a phase one, which is the immediate crisis. And I think in that phase, the predominant focus of the banking sector, the central banks, governments was essentially keeping the economy going as good as we could, right? It's about providing liquidity, giving customer access to government programs, providing payment holidays. But I would say that was almost not the easy bit, but the quite straightforward bit, because we have the tools and we needed to keep the economy essentially on track as good as we could. I think the next phase is getting the economy out of the crisis, companies building up working capital again, companies refinancing. A lot of bailouts will happen in the next phase. And I think that will be a very important phase because some companies will find it much easier than other companies. Some business models are more affected than others. And so that next phase, I think, is really for the financial sector to help those companies that are able to come out and also help those that will struggle to transform in the right way. And then for me, the third phase is the phase when we will see real stimulus. Right? We know we need to come out of this crisis with a better recovery. We also know that we need to provide a stimulus to come out at certain pace. And I think there, again, we as HSBC, we as a financial services sector, have a big role to play to actually support that stimulus package, ideally a green one.
I think that point on a green one is one I'd really like to delve into in a little bit more detail, particularly given the focus of this podcast. So we've certainly seen a huge amount of research that has suggested that organizations with strong environmental, social, governance credentials have been more resilient through the crisis. From an investor perspective, have performed better, maybe have dealt with some of the challenges that the pandemic has thrown at companies better than others in their sector. Is that something that you've seen through the research that you've done?
Yeah, I think it's a very, very good point, and I think a really important one. This is essentially our first real ESG crisis, right? It's a major pandemic. People sort of knew that it could come, but nobody really prepared for it. And now we have a major economic impact from a crisis that essentially is an ESG crisis. And I think it's really important to look at the narrative that we have built up over the last few years, that companies that are better aligned with ESG will perform better in a crisis, right? I think we as a collective have built up that narrative, and we now had our first test. And you're absolutely right. I think that we've done analysis on two levels. We've done analysis on ESG, but also on companies that are more climate aligned. And in both cases, companies with a higher ESG score and companies that are better aligned with climate objectives significantly outperformed the market in the crisis in all regions and at a global benchmark. So HSBC has done that research. Moody's came out recently. Some of the larger asset managers came out with similar research. And I think that's really important because it helps to bring home the point that actually companies that are better ESG aligned are normally better managed, are normally the better performers when it comes to a difficult situation. And I think that will inform a lot of future investor behavior in that space.
So as a bank, you clearly have investment activities, you've got the lending activities within the bank, some of the work that you might do from more of the advisory side of things. How are you incorporating those insights?
Yeah, I think the COVID crisis will accelerate this entire discussion. And I have three reasons why I think the COVID crisis will actually accelerate this debate. One is the one we just talked about. I think people are now more aware than ever that ESG matters. It's not just a marketing tool, and actually looking at ESG from a performance and a risk perspective is incredibly important. So I think the big push here will be for investors, but also for lenders, to look a lot more at the ESG risks of individual underlyings, but also the performance driver of that. The second point I think that is really important is this crisis probably brought forward the energy transition by a decade. And not just the energy transition, it's the whole transition to what people call the fourth industrial revolution, right? It's a world that is more digital, lower carbon, and suddenly we have something that we thought may happen over a decade, we have it now. The use of real estate, the use of transport, certain types of energy, and look at what happened to the oil price. So a lot of these discussions that we thought we have a decade to work through, some of them are here and now, and companies actually need to transform their business models from a standstill. And I think that's really, really important and really critical. And so for a lender, it's suddenly a very different discussion whether you thought you could actually work with your clients over a decade versus you have to transform in the middle of a crisis. And for me, the third one is the green stimulus that we mentioned. The green stimulus can actually unlock a lot of the financial flows that we were talking about for the last 5 to 10 years. We all know that the world needs to invest $100 trillion into the energy transition. We know the numbers that come out of the UN about the Sustainable Development Goals, but there was never really money because we were still fighting the last financial crisis. Now there is, I think, the mandate for governments to provide a stimulus, hopefully one that's more aligned with some of our greater objectives. And therefore, I think that will again accelerate the shift to a business model and an economy that is a lot more aligned with low carbon, social goals, and the wider sustainable development goals.
I think back to the start of the year, certainly some of those themes around particularly the climate crisis were really on the front page of a lot of newspapers, top of mind for a lot of CEOs and execs and the finance community around the world. You've touched on a few ways that theme has really remained in spite of the pandemic, so potentially even brought forward the response. How do you think that banks need to respond, and maybe looking at some of the lessons from the pandemics, what would the consequences be if we don't manage to have a green recovery, if we don't accelerate that transition?
Yeah, so I think we always looked at the climate debate in particular, but also the broader ESG debate as probably our single biggest commercial opportunity, but also one of the biggest financial risks to us. And I think it's really important that whenever we talk about this, we look at both sides. We know that this transition will create the winners of the future. We know that this transition will create completely new industries. And if you're a good bank, your balance sheet essentially reflects the economy of the future. But we also know that this energy transition and the broader SDG debate will create very fundamental risks, because a lot of business models have to transform quite fundamentally. And I think it's important to look at this again, now with the crisis lens on, a lot of business models struggle to transform because you had to invest in old technologies to maintain essentially your cash flow, and at the same time invest into the future. And many people struggled with that. And now you have a crisis that essentially pulls the profit rug out underneath of you. And so I think we as a system have a very important job to do now to manage the risks, but also really help those customers that want to transition to that future business model, because it is now more urgent than it ever was.
As you know, we work with a lot of CFOs around the world. So what would you be looking to them to be doing to signal to you that they're worthwhile you continuing to invest in their companies or provide lending? And I guess, where would you see that partnership really going to accelerate the transition?
So I think it's a number of things. All of them, I think, are well discussed in your network. I think it starts with setting a credible target and a pathway. I think it's really important that companies look at the next decade or longer and look at how will their business model change. And I think nobody expects businesses to change overnight. I'm not a fan of the discussions that are green and brown because they will not get us anywhere. The majority, 95% of the economy, are somewhere on that spectrum. And so I think the first job is for every CEO, chairman, CFO to set a pathway. I think the second one is along that pathway, set certain milestones. Milestones that are achievable, that can be shared with investors, that investors and banks hopefully support. And then the third piece is disclosure. I think more transparency allows you to actually demonstrate that it's not just a marketing tool, that it's real. And so I think things like TCFD are really, really important because they suddenly turned what used to be sometimes a nice sustainability report into something that actually is hardwired into your financial accounts. And that really transformed the dialogue, I think, on disclosure.
And TCFD, of course, is the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. And we'll be doing a podcast deep diving on reporting soon. But as you say, lots of information on our website to help people navigate how to report and how to disclose. What you started with there was talking about targets. And we've been working with that CFO community building commitment to net zero emissions targets. For a bank and any other financial institution, I think it's really hard to set a net zero target, potentially harder than for others because you're exposed to all of those other parts of the economy. Can you say a little bit about some of those challenges, how you're thinking about going about it, how you might be able to overcome the challenges and maybe whether you think it's something important for those in the financial services sector to be doing at all?
Yeah, so I think we all agree with the principle of net zero, and I think the principle is well understood, right? The world needs to achieve net zero by 2050. That means all of the economies around the world need to be on a pathway that's compliant with that, and that means the financial services sector needs to resemble that. And given that our financial flows often front run future economic shapes, we need to anticipate what that model is. So I think the principle and the logic is very clear and very intuitive. The place where it gets a bit more difficult for us is that obviously for a bank, for an insurance company, for an asset manager, we have two types of emissions. We have our own emissions, which are normally quite small, and we run data centers and we have a few people flying around the world. But that doesn't really matter in the greater scheme of things. The one where it matters is our banked emissions. And as you say, I think there the logic is very clear, but the data at the moment is very, very patchy because we rely on transparency that we get from our clients. That works reasonably well when you look at listed companies, especially in Europe and increasingly in the US. This is much harder once you go into the mid-market private loan space. It's much harder once you go into emerging markets. So I think we are very clear about the direction of travel, but it's much harder at the moment to build a true scientific model because we still have a lot of gaps in the underlying sort of data engine. I don't think this should hold us back in any way. I think we can get started and there are many very logical steps. But for the full answer, I think a bit more work is required. The way I like to think about this is it's almost, we need to do this sector by sector. We bank a number of very large clients. We went public in our TCFD disclosure that we have six sectors that we call particular transition risk sectors. It's oil and gas, metals and mining, utilities, transportation, the chemical sector, and the construction and real estate sector. In all of these sectors, we need to understand what actually is that pathway to net zero and how do we help our clients. And at that point, it gets meaningful because it will require real actions. And I don't think in any of these sectors our exposure will go to zero. but I hope that the clients that we support in these sectors will actually transition, and we are there to help.
For you as a bank and others in the financial services sector, clearly regulators have a pretty heavy hand in driving action. We've seen regulators really starting to focus on these topics, particularly climate risk, and recognizing that climate risk is financially material. You've got the Network for Greening a Financial System, a network of central banks around the world who are really coordinating action. So how are you finding that regulatory focus supporting, enabling, accelerating the actions you're taking? And what does that mean for other companies?
Yeah, I think it's a really, really important point, because regulators are taking a very proactive stand on this, and it will be felt by the financial service industry, but also over time, the real economy that we support. You mentioned the NGFS, the Network for Greening the Financial System, which is now a network of more than 60 central banks and regulators around the world that have taken it to their mission to integrate climate risk in the way the financial services sector works. And it's, again, not an emotional thing that they want to do. It is a belief that the system currently misprices risk, because very often we do our risk assessment looking backwards, and we forget that over the next 20 years, we have a very fundamental financial risk coming that could affect the sector. And the regulators are thinking about two types of risks. They're thinking about transition risk, which means we're moving faster to a low carbon economy and we're leaving certain assets and businesses behind. And they're thinking about physical risk, which essentially we don't address climate change and we get major weather events, floods, droughts, mass migrations, and the like. Both are very, very fundamental for, if you think about the insurance industry, the banking industry. And so what central banks are now doing is, and regulators, essentially looking at four different dimensions. They're looking at how are financial services firms integrating climate risk into the way they govern? Is this discussed at the board? Is somebody responsible for it? Second, they're looking at how do we integrate it into risk management? Is it part of the way we look at market risk, credit risk? Do we discuss the risk with our clients? The third is, are we disclosing? Are we as a financial sector actually putting to the public a picture of how exposed we are to climate risk? And the fourth, and actually probably most interesting one that we're now facing, is a number of stress tests and scenario analysis. So we are being asked to run stress tests for the next 30 years about how will our business model perform under different climate scenarios. And it's very obvious the way we think about this performance in different sectors will in the future affect the way we talk to our clients and the way we will assess risk weightings.
Another really important influential group is the credit rating agencies. What are you seeing them doing to really embed some of these issues into how they go about ratings?
So credit rating agencies have a very similar topic to address that we discussed at the very beginning of our conversation. It is now very clear that ESG is a driver of performance and risk. So if you think about a credit rating, it is no longer enough to just look at a P&L. You need to look at all of these factors because they are true financial performance factors. So over the last few years, I think all of the big rating agencies have built out their capabilities and the muscle. It's now about actually flexing that muscle and showing that credit ratings actually differ based on different ESG ratings.
And I think if you look at the different rating agencies, increasingly they're sharing research and being quite open about ways that those ratings have changed for certain sectors, certain companies, based on some of the environmental, social, other factors. Yeah,
you're absolutely right. And also it's quite interesting to see that suddenly a lot of rating agencies actually acquire companies that at the first glance look so far away from a rating agencies, a satellite imagery company that looks at physical risk and weather risk. And you suddenly see how this lens that was quite far away from the core of a rating agency actually really comes together and informs the future of a credit rating.
One of the things that we've talked about quite a lot in the past is sustainable infrastructure. So the investments we're making now, the infrastructure we're building, particularly in emerging markets, is going to determine the future. and really dictate the kind of world that all of us live in. I'd be really interested to hear from you what role finance plays in making sure that that infrastructure is delivering a sustainable future and isn't locking in an unsustainable one.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, in emerging markets in particular, we are now building a city a day. We're building infrastructure in the energy space, in the transportation space, across all of Asia, where we have a few billion people, Africa, Latin America. And what we're doing now will determine whether we are able to deliver the climate goals or not. When it comes to finance, I would separate two types of infrastructure there. I think there is an element of infrastructure that is now perfectly bankable. Renewables in most of these markets is working incredibly well. And I think there is just making sure that enough of foreign capital really gets access. But it works under commercial terms and in most places is very happy to compete with traditional sources of energy because it just works better. But then there is a large chunk of infrastructure that currently isn't commercially viable. And that comes from different reasons. Sometimes it's the projects themselves, but very often it's political risk, foreign exchange risk, other risks that people face when they have actually most of their money sitting in liquid assets in US dollars, and the projects are 15-year infrastructure builds in emerging markets. And I think that's where this very often concept of blended finance comes in. I think it's really important that we use the concept of the multilateral development banks, combine it with private capital, crowd in private capital, and unlock that. We've seen a few really interesting structures come out lately, but there's still a few and beyond rather than a platform that can really accelerate the deployment. And the other topic that I think is really important is that investors and the private sector agree certain principles. So you've seen this in early days now with the principles of the Green Belt and Road. So just agreeing collectively, what do we actually mean when we talk about green infrastructure, sustainable infrastructure? There's a similar platform that we're involved in at the moment, driven out of the One Planet platform from President Macron together with the OECD, where a large number of global investors are coming together to agree, when we say sustainable infrastructure, what does it actually mean? Because once you agree that, it's much easier to mobilize money. But I think to your point, you're absolutely right. Infrastructure in emerging markets will be absolutely key. But also, if you think about the negative rate environment in emerging market, it would also be key for investors to get access to it, because that's where you actually get yield and where you can still create a financial return.
As a global bank, you've got a footprint in a lot of countries, a lot of parts of the world, but particularly strong, I think, from an Asia perspective, as well as the footprint that you have in Europe. Can you say a little bit about how you see responses to the pandemic differing in different parts of the world, or indeed whether you do, but particularly that what next question? How are we going to come out of the pandemic and build a stronger economy, a greener economy as part of that recovery?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. And as you say, I think the response varies a bit. I think Europe in all dimensions is far ahead, and I think it's most aligned to make sure that a recovery is greener, better, whatever word you want to use. And I think that you can see in the way regulators respond, governments respond, investors respond, but also increasingly the public. And I think that's really important, because it only works if your stakeholders are aligned. I think in other parts of the world, it's more patchy, but actually for me, a positive surprise so far. You have the Canadian government coming out, connecting a bailout program with emissions or climate targets and mandatory climate disclosure. You have governments in Japan, Korea doing green stimulus programs. But also, I think you have increasingly private sector players in emerging markets realizing that this is not just a risk, this is also a real opportunity. And I think it's very clear that this accelerated transition to a low carbon economy will mean that actually a number of the future winners in these sectors will come out of emerging markets. And I think that's as important to actually understand that this is a real opportunity that if Europe and the US doesn't capture it, I think they're now increasingly players in Asia quite willing to capture this. So it's, I think, really important to understand that it's no longer just a government agenda. It's an agenda that I think is shared by many, many constituents, and especially in emerging markets, I think a lot of private sector players see it as a real opportunity.
Think of the companies that you work with in some of those different economies. Are there different discussions that you're seeing coming through, or different challenges that different businesses face, and maybe a different way that you need to talk about these issues in different markets, or actually very similar trends globally?
Yeah, I think there are quite a few big differences. The first one is just awareness. I think it is very easy to sit in London and or in Europe and believe that everybody in the world already gets it, but I think it's just not the case. I think when you think about how we started this discussion today around the importance of ESG, when you are in many parts of Asia, but even in many parts of the Americas, the main discussion that you're still having is whether you can have either impact or performance. And I think we are now in a place where we believe actually the two things go hand in hand. I think the second big difference is in developed markets, we often talk about replacement of existing infrastructure, replacement of existing industries. While in emerging markets, you actually talk about how do you deliver 8 to 10% economic growth and achieve a transition to a low carbon economy. So it's quite a different discussion. And I think the third big difference is that actually in our part of the world, we're long in assets, right? We have actually too much money that would like to invest in these and not enough opportunities. In emerging markets, it's very often the other way around. Actually, a lot of investment opportunities, but not enough money is actually willing to take that type of risk. And so I think quite a few differences all around the same theme, but from an educational level, from a risk appetite level, and just from a starting position, are you a growing economy or are you a more sideways moving one, actually changes the dynamic quite significantly.
When it comes to some of the incentives that companies might have to be really investing in the transition, really investing in sustainable products, making sure that their CapEx, their infrastructure is sustainable. As a bank, you can clearly put in place some carrots and sticks. I'd be interested in your views on, do you use mainly carrots? Do you use sticks? A bit of a combination of the two. How do you think you can really incentivize, accelerate your clients and how they can move forward?
Yeah, and I think it's really both. I think the carrot is largely, in my mind, the very clear view from many investors that this is what actually is the future. And therefore, if you look at, especially in the green space, there is a very large amount of money chasing investment opportunities that are aligned with the Paris Agreement, the low carbon economy. And that's not just because people believe that's the right thing to do. It's because that's where the commercial opportunity is. So I think one of the carrots obviously is access to money, access to funds. When you take the green bond market, which is the most sort of publicly discussed market, issuance are always materially oversubscribed and companies get access to investors that normally would never invest in certain sectors. And I think that's one of the carrots. I think the second carrot is we as a financial sector can provide incentives. So you look at now the emerging trend of what's called sustainability-linked loans, sustainability-linked bonds. We've done a few sustainability-linked supply chain mandates where actually either suppliers or company themselves get a reduction in their interest rates if they deliver on their ESG or their climate targets. Or the other way around, if they don't deliver, actually they get a move in the wrong direction. That's another example of a carrot, but there are, I think, sticks that are coming. And also if you look at what the regulators are doing, there's certainly the push to reflect climate risk in the way you assess credit risk. And as soon as you go down that route, you can understand that actually, if you include climate risk in the way you look at future credit risk, it will affect pricing. So companies that don't have a credible pathway, companies that don't have a management team that actually can paint a pathway to the future, will over time find it either harder to get money or will get money at a higher cost.
So if you're speaking to your colleagues around the world, as a very large organization, you clearly have to do some of that internal sales job, as well as convincing your customers of the need to act. What is the thing that you found really convinces them most effectively?
I wouldn't say it is a single thing. I always think about it as everybody has slightly different brains. There are some brains that function about future business opportunity. And so I think it's important that in large parts of the bank, you talk about the future and why actually this is the right thing to do from just from a commercial strategic sense. I think there's some people that function because they're worried about risk. Right? We are quite a conservative organization. We assess risk, I think, in a really good way. And suddenly there comes this risk that is playing out over the next decade or two, and we don't quite understand it. And I think working that through is maybe the second brain. But sometimes the most powerful brain actually is the more emotional one. I think a lot of people have children and want to go home to their children and talk about this. Our new graduates want to talk about this topic and nothing else. And so I think you suddenly have a actually completely new driver that makes this topic so relevant. But I'm convinced that in every organization, you will find people with at least one of the three brains, but it's important to play all of the brains.
Maybe playing to that third brain, I'd be really interested in hearing from you what makes you hopeful.
Yeah, I would say the last 5 years, especially the ones since the Paris Agreement, were, I think, very, very powerful years to build a lot of the foundations. Right? We've built foundations about understanding how future economies and sectors will look like. We've built the foundations about a sustainable finance market, so green bonds and green loans and all of that, which is now 3-5% of the financial sector. We've built the foundations on regulation and disclosure. So I think we've created the framework. We now need to scale it. And I feel over the last, especially the last 12 to 24 months, the number of seniors that have come on board with this, the number of decision makers that understand this is not just the right thing to do, but is actually an essential thing to do that is becoming more and more urgent, gives me hope that actually, as we emerge out of this crisis, as we prepare for COP26, we will prepare for something that actually gives it that scale. Because I think that's really the, we need to move from the millions to the billions to the trillions. We have all the tools now. I think it's to play them right.
I'm afraid that's all we've got time for today, but a really big thank you, Daniel, for sharing so many interesting thoughts and suggestions and for leaving us on a note of hope. If you're keen to learn more about some of the topics that we covered today, then go to accountingforsustainability.org, our website, where you can find a lot of resources, further reading, top tips and guides that can help you to take action. While you're on the website, do sign up for the A4S newsletter. You can keep up to date with future podcast episodes and hear the latest outputs from A4S. Thanks again for listening, and we hope to speak to you again soon.